Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. It is Monday, and Mondays were made for Macero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action. From queso to kickoffs, this is how Macero does game night. Macero Football Mondays in 12 South. Don't miss a snap. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Titans, their loss to the Chargers. They're dropping to 1-8 on the season with him.
As you predicted.
A little bit later in the show. Yes, it was predicted beforehand. I did have him beating the Colts earlier in the year, which is objectively hilarious to think about now.
I'm glad you brought up the Colts. I hope Indy Ben's okay with Daniel Jones. Five turnovers. I'm not saying that
didn't go well.
I'm not saying it's pumpkin time and whatever. But
by the way, against the defense, it's pretty bad. Like Pittsburgh's defense has been bad.
Uh-oh, Colts fans.
Just throwing it out there. They weren't bad yesterday.
Yeah, that's a little bit concerning.
It is. Tennessee effectively eliminated from college football playoff consideration with a loss to Oklahoma over the weekend. They fall to the Sooners at home at Neyland Stadium, which means, I mean, the three biggest games that they've played to this point this year, Joe, have been Georgia, Alabama, and Oklahoma, and they have lost all of them. So you look at the quality wins for Tennessee, they don't really have any. Like Syracuse is not that good. Mississippi State's, yeah. Arkansas is not very good. So it just the schedule now at this point, we've talked about the possibility maybe, depending on how things shake out, of a three-loss team getting into the college football playoff. That three-loss team is not going to be Tennessee. Like, they just don't have enough quality wins.
Yeah, someone on the YouTube chat is like, mathematically, they might still be in, but nah, they're really not. Because, like you just said, you know, the three-loss team that could happen would be, for example, Oklahoma. When you look at their schedule, is just absurd this year. So they I mean, I wouldn't predict it. But, like, if you look at what's ahead, what they got, Georgia – like, if they split these two huge games that they have ahead, is it Georgia and Bama? Is that
no, right? they got Oklahoma, or they got Alabama, I think, this week coming up. And then it's Missouri and LSU.
Okay. Yeah, okay. For some reason, I thought they had Bama and Georgia ahead. So, they're probably – I mean, like, if they were to beat Alabama, lose to Missouri, you know, could they be a 9-3? Again, what kind of chaos are we talking about here? Look, Vanderbilt at 10-2 may not get in too. That's the flip side of this. Like, there could be a huge glut of 10-2 teams. So, but I would say that right now Tennessee making the playoff is like way less than 1%.
It's not happening.
Yeah, they're out, and it's very disappointing. Because, like you said, you look at those three games. First of all, I mean, Joey Aguilar sets them up to win the Georgia game, and they miss the kick. And then he throws picks that are key in the, you know, in the two other losses.
Yep.
Just not quite good enough. I mean, it's like you go back to the beginning of the year, you go back to Nico leaving, all that stuff. What do we talk about? Yeah, 8-4, you know?
Yep.
That's probably about what this is, an 8-4 team. And they can still be a 9-3 team, but it's still disappointing because Georgia was there. And I think this game was there too. I mean, this game was there. If you just finish drives and don't give them the ball in the first half, you're kicking their butt.
I mean, yeah, they totally dominated the first half, except for when they handed the ball to the other team, right? I mean, that's the only reason Oklahoma was really in the game at halftime. I do think the game flipped at halftime. Like, I think Oklahoma was better than they were in the second half. And Oklahoma got some things figured out on offense, and John Mateer and the running game became a big part of what they were able to do. In the second half of that game, Tennessee really just couldn't get anything going on offense in the second half. They had the big play in the third quarter made by Staley. But other than that, I mean, it was, you know, Tennessee's defense forces a big turnover of the fumble, and Tennessee's offense does what it's done too often this year, which is immediately after a turnover, you go 3-and-out. Like, when your defense forces a turnover, you got to go do something with it if you're Tennessee. And they've been really bad at that all year, of doing something after Tennessee's defense forces a turnover. So another situation of that. Like, I think it was two different games. I think Tennessee came out and played basically the way they wanted to in the first half. They were moving the ball down the field. The yardage advantage they had was really high. And yet you have basically Joey Aguilar lollipopping two footballs up, and then a fumble on the third one that was brought back for a touchdown, and that's how you end up trailing at halftime in a game that you've dominated to that point. And then Oklahoma figured some things out and played better in the second half. So I just thought it was just bad football from Tennessee in the second half. Good football from Tennessee, save for about four plays in the first half. Otherwise, I mean, you could have been up. I mean, no lie, they could have been up, I don't know, 17 points at halftime had they just not handed the ball to the other team. Right. And that's the thing on those turnovers.
And they're not overcoming that. Well, Oklahoma's not coming back from that.
No, and that's the thing on those turnovers, too. Like, it wasn't even really that Oklahoma, particularly on the interceptions, made great plays on them. It was just horrific decisions from Aguilar. Like, you're throwing the ball into double coverage, or you're predetermining where you're going with the football, and he was basically a pop fly for their safety back there.
Yeah, it was a bad turnover. And obviously, you had the blocking screw up on the fumble, and of course the fact that turns into a scoop and score. It's just, there's some bad luck in there, some bad decisions. And then the second half, the thing is, the second half they still had their chances too. You know, they did. They but Oklahoma made enough plays, and it's very disappointing for sure. And of course there's a little bit of, it's like you think back a year ago, it was such a big thing. Heupel facing the program where he won a championship as a quarterback, the program that fired him, scapegoated him as OC, and he goes in there, triumphant homecoming, wins that game, even though that game was ugly as all get out, but great defensive performance and all that stuff. And then a year later, they come in to his place and knock him out of the playoff. I mean, that's for him, that's got to be especially bitter for this to be the way it goes.
So what does it mean for Tennessee in the program? Like you said, I mean, before the season, and this is why this conversation that's going on right now is interesting to me. Like, before the season, most people had Tennessee going like 8-4 or 7-5, right? And we'll see what ends up. I mean, 7-5, I guess, is still possible with Tennessee. You could lose to Florida and Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens on that front. They could also win against Florida and Vanderbilt. It's not like they're going to be, overwhelmed athletically against either one of those teams. So we'll see what happens on that front. But you're not making the college football playoff. The defense, despite playing pretty well for the most part in this game, has been a point of contention all year. What does it mean for Heupel? Does he make any changes after the year? If he doesn't, what's the response going to be from Tennessee fans? I mean, I can tell you, if he doesn't make any changes, Tennessee fans are going to be mad. They want Tim Banks fired. I think they want Joey Halsley fired. We'll see what happens on all that front. If I had to guess, my guess would be there's probably not going to be any changes. That's just my guess. We'll see what happens on that front. But what do you make of the Heupel program in general conversation now that the playoff probably is not happening?
Yeah, I think it's fair as long as you keep it within perspective, which some Vols fans aren't, of course. But, yeah, I do every Monday, a message board Monday at The Athletic. And this week I spent some time, some serious time yesterday on those message boards, Vault Quest and 24/7. And, the thing is about the message boards even is like, 90% of the people are rational. And it's just that you have some people who are like, he must be fired, he must be gone. So, like, message board geniuses gets the Vols who are like, get him out of there. And most Vols fans don't think that. There was, a poll on one of those boards, and – it's overwhelmingly he's pretty good or he's good, and then there's a tiny little fraction of people want him fired.
Yeah.
But it's not a tiny fraction of people who, like you said, want some kind of moves. And this is, I think, one of the things about Heupel that we're going to find out. At times you do have to make moves. At times that's not the issue, and we in the outside world thinks it's the issue, and maybe it's something else. I don't know for sure. I can't sit here and tell you Tim Banks stinks as a DC, because we've seen some years where I thought he was pretty good, but this year's bad. So should Tim Banks be fired? I mean, I don't know. Do I think Joey Halsley should be fired? I'm not saying that either. I do absolutely think that losing Golish was a loss.
Yeah,
but it's been a while now too, right? I mean, this has been a way better year for the offense, has it not?
Yes, it has. They have not been as good, even though the numbers would say they're still good at running the football. They're not what they've been running the football.
Yeah.
They couldn't run the ball at all on Saturday against Oklahoma. And I wonder why that is. Is that an offensive line thing? Is it because the three backs you have are like okay, but they're not Dylan Sampson? Like, what's the reasoning for that? That to me has been probably the most disappointing thing this year. Is like in big moments, you know, they ran it okay against Alabama because Alabama was hell bent on not letting them hit in the deep shot down the field, but they've just not been able to run the ball very consistently this year.
Yeah, you still like the overall production, the overall numbers. It looks more like it looked, you know, when it was really rolling. Yep. But, yeah, that's true. Like, you want to be able to, you know, run the ball when you need to run the ball. There's the offensive line. Yep. I mean, people talk about the offensive line coach, defensive backs coach. Yeah, look, they've also had bad luck this year. I mean, look, I think that at some point with Heupel, and we've talked about this before, but do you get to the point where it's like, you know what, this guy did an incredible job. Like, you can't talk about how bad it was before he got there forever.
No, and we're moving out of that.
Yeah, like, I think you still, like, that's still perspective that's important. But you can't talk about it forever. At some point, do you get to the point where it's like, okay, great job, fantastic, and now who takes this to where you can win a national championship?
Right.
I'm not saying he can't, but I think that we're not too far from that being a fair discussion. And time management is a problem.
Yeah.
Some operational stuff is a problem. Some of the ways these games, they go on the road and they really just kind of crumble.
Yeah. I mean,
there's some things that are consistent.
They got to get figured out. There's no doubt. Like the perspective stuff on what he took over, I think we're probably – it's time to move out of that conversation because this is 5 years. Like it's you've now established yourself as your – look, Heupel's done a good job. I think the conversation of like the small segment of Tennessee fans that want him fired now, I think it's frankly stupid. Like I just think it's dumb.
Of course he's not going to get fired.
If you're another year, another 2 years down the road, and you're not making the playoff, well then it's different, right?
Yeah.
I think we're in a different discussion at that point.
Yeah, I mean the playoff, you know, we had the 12-team playoff. They made it last year as far from a perfect team. It's probably going to go up. That becomes definitely for a program like Tennessee, more times than not, you should make it.
Yeah.
Which is not easy. I mean, this league is loaded with competitive programs, but I think that's a fair standard.
Let's welcome in Adam in Portland to the show. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
I don't know, man. I guess I'm just looking at it different. Like, Joe, I remember you specifically in the preseason saying, I think Merklinger is going to win the job. Like,
yeah, that was a
nobody
good call.
Believed in Joey Aguilar, man. He's supposed to be some erratic quarterback who couldn't complete a ball 30 yards down the field and just always throwing into traffic. He's been fantastic, man. He's been a really good quarterback. Our five-star quarterback win us in the spring, like in the most unprecedented way. So I'm proud of the program. They got their butts handed to them by Oklahoma and Alabama. They do not deserve to be in the playoffs. I still think their kicker screwed them in Georgia. I really would have loved to have seen them at least have a chance at the end to be competitive. But if you can't hang with Alabama and Oklahoma, you don't deserve to be there, dude. So I don't know. I'm looking at it different. I think the Titans have me so warped that I can't look at them as a bad team. I'm like, they did great, dude. Like, what a good season. I understand the defense wasn't perfect, but you also lost a lot of big pieces there too, including your best pass rusher. So I don't know. I'm proud of this Tennessee team. I did not expect anything from them this year, and I love that quarterback.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it. A couple more things on the Heupel front I want to get to coming up next, including a lot of belly aching over one particular decision they made on Saturday. And one thing I said before the season that I think is coming to fruition now that just amazes me with some people. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
He's got his short on. I guess that's no longer frowned upon in the sport.
Yeah, I guess not. It is with me. But
those are the shortest I've ever seen on a football field.
Should be, right? Bill, that should be a penalty. Just dressing like that should be a penalty. The hell is it? Wearing shorts out there?
It's another 50-plus. This is from 51 to give Oklahoma the lead. Sandell, short shorts, but not short on distance. Powers it through again from 51, and Oklahoma is on top on Rocky Top. Venables smiling for good reason. His team's been outplayed with two takeaways. Not done much on offense, but they got a kicker.
Yeah, got his Daisy Dukes on and puts it in the middle again. 51.
Short shorts for the Oklahoma kicker the other night.
What'd you tweet? Vols are losing to a kicker with a thong.
Yeah.
The thong song.
Good stuff out there. And then he just drills it. He had 255 yarders in the game.
Sure. Like,
good grief.
Yeah. Oh, man. Get rid of those pants, and all of a sudden, look what you can do.
I guess so. A couple things on the hypo front. Number one, and I'm going to pick on Abel here because he's the most recent one that does it, but we've heard it from about four or five people today, and I heard it from people in all over the place on Twitter in the immediate aftermath of it. And I'm just – there are plenty of things with Tennessee, with hypo, with play calling to pick apart in this game specifically and throughout the season. I'm having a tough time understanding – why they're getting so much heat for the play call on 4th-and-1 that, by the way, got somebody about as open as they can be on the play. The ball hit the kid in the face mask, and that's the coach's fault. Like, if we can't expect the SEC scholarship athlete, who, by the way, I think is like a 4-star recruit, to catch the football, then you probably need to take scholarship away. Like, if you can't expect him to catch the ball, probably need to throw it somewhere else. And my response, well, what, throw it to Braylon Staley. It's like, well, it's not the set they ran. They made it look like they were going to run. And then they threw it to the tight end. Well, throw it to Kitzelman. Well, Kitzelman drops the ball more than anybody on the team. He's dropped the ball all year long. So, like, I'm having a tough time really understanding why, out of all the things we could be mad about, if you're a Tennessee fan, the play that got somebody wide open by 8 yards is the play that we're choosing here.
Yeah. I think the only thing about it that I'll – listen to a little is just the, you know, it's a guy who just hasn't been in those situations yet. You know, it's such a huge situation, but that also could be part of how he got so wide open, right?
I mean,
right?
There's no one in the same zip code of it.
Yeah,
no, and that's the play caller's fault,
right? The play worked. He was wide open. The execution was bad, and you know, I mean, to me, it's like, I don't know that I blame the kid. The ball kind of hit him in the – he did
he got
turn.
Hung up at the line.
Yeah, he got hung up. He needed to turn a little faster or whatever. The quarterback needs to say it. You know, it was all mucked up, but generally I'm with you.
Yeah, there's no one within 8 yards of it.
Yeah, there are other things more worth complaining about.
Now, the other thing on the hypo front, and I understand you react to information that you see at the time and all those things. I will say, you know, some of the same people in April – when Nico left and bolted, that were all hypo, taking a stand. He's our guy. One of the things I said then was, all right, how are you going to feel when you go 8-4 this year? Oh, no, it's fine. He's taking a stand. He's our guy. And predictably, some of those same people who are all team hypo when he took the stand and moved on from Nico and all those things, now that they may have the audacity to go 9-3 in a year like this, or some of the same people that want to fire him at this point, yeah, which is very predictable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, of course. That's the thing. You go through it, and then you get the emotion. You have a big game, and you, like, this is a huge, like we talked, it's a playoff elimination game, and then all the things that happen that go wrong, I mean, most of it, frankly, not on coaching, I would say, but still, a lot of things go wrong. It's an emotional loss, so now you're pissed off. Yeah, we talked about it at the time. It's like, okay, let's. Are you going to keep that energy?
Yeah.
And remember, they did try to go get other quarterbacks. There were times this year when I watched Joey Aguilar play, and I'm like, I don't know if they could have gotten a better guy for this offense. He throws a great deep ball. He's had a heck of a year, but still led the FBS in interceptions last year, and you did see that a little bit in this last game. I mean, there's just no – I don't – and even Heupel doesn't throw players on the bus, but – even like his post game was like, yeah, didn't see the rotation out there. Through the, I mean, it's just like it is what, like the guy just made a couple terrible decisions out there as a quarterback, and so it ends up being that is really costly to you in a game like this. But yeah, people should remember that, what they said at the time. You got put in a bad spot, you know, like it or not, and then went out and struck out on at least three or four guys.
Yeah.
So, yes. I agree with you. Also, it's not surprising at all.
No, and again, the big picture program part of this, if they go through next year and they don't make the playoff, then we're probably at that point going to be having legitimate conversations about Heupel, right? Like, it's like, I don't know if he gets fired if he misses the playoff next year, but there's going to be legitimate hot seat talk. There's no doubt about it. I still think you look at the whole picture of this, and Adam Sparks – did a pretty good job on this at Knoxville News Sentinel. the guy's done a pretty darn good job. And I know that you want coaches that win national championships. We'll see if he ultimately gets there. And if it becomes clear in a year or two that he's just not going to be – he's good, but he's never going to take you to great, then you probably have to make a move at that point if you're Tennessee. I don't think we're really close to that at the moment.
No, I don't either. It is in this environment, you look at – I mean, Hugh Freeze is out. You know, Brian Kelly's – I mean,
even Maryland's changing their coach. It's like – in a year where
I think that was fake.
I think that
was a fake account.
All right. Yeah. Well, Maryland's not changing their coach. Good for them. Because I was going to say, in a year where everybody's changed your coach, if you're some of these other programs that aren't that are trying to make a decision,
yeah.
I probably wouldn't do it this year. There's a limited amount of great coaches that are out there, and the list is pretty deep right now of jobs available.
Right, and so maybe next year, you know, it's a totally different situation, but. Yeah, then whenever you do that, it's like, okay, so you're doing that to upgrade. So what's the clear upgrade from Josh Heupel, you know, for Tennessee? I mean, it's he's done a really good job. There are fair criticisms. It is really going to be interesting with the
staff.
Yeah, with the staff. Yeah. Again, because it's not always the right answer to fire people, but I also do think some coaches, there's a loyalty thing. And look, let's face it, Josh Heupel played for his coached under his college coach with all his buddies who he grew up with and did all these great things, and then he got scapegoated and sent out of there.
Yeah.
That is probably a guy who is hesitant, more hesitant than some other coaches, to do the same thing to somebody else.
I would agree. Let's head back to the phone line. Welcome in David in Portland to the program. David, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Morning, gentlemen. So on the 4th-and-1, I kind of side with Joe. That's kind of how I felt. At the moment when I watched it, I'm like, is there really, you know, freshman tight end, you know, in that situation? I probably would have chosen a different player, but nonetheless, I want to talk about the quarterback situation. So after this season and Aguilar is gone and Faison Brandon comes in, you're going to have a true freshman and a redshirt freshman, George McIntyre, because Mark Linger is probably going to transfer. Do they go get another quarterback out of the portal like they did with Aguilar, or do they just run it with Faison Brandon and just see what he's got like Michigan is doing with Bryce Underwood? And I'll hang up and listen.
Yep, thanks for calling. It's a great question. I mean, if I had to guess, Joe, they're probably going to go get a quarterback that's a veteran guy that they feel good about maybe being a backup.
Who is okay being a backup.
Yes.
So that's what it's got to be. You can't go try to get a starter with those two guys.
I think it's going to be Faison Brandon and George McIntyre as quarterback competition next year.
Let me amend that. You can't go try to get a starter unless you think you have someone who's tremendous.
Yeah.
And then that's what it is. Like, if you know, again, Indiana goes on, Fernando Mendoza. Oh my gosh, he might win the Heisman.
Yeah,
I mean, if you have someone like that who's a veteran, fine. But I don't think so. I think you're right. I think it's just depth.
And again, back on the 4th-and-1 call, like if the guy just makes the catch, you know what we'd be talking about today? Man, what a great play call! What a great play call it was.
Yeah. You got him wide open, and unfortunately,
it's not too much to expect an SEC scholarship player to catch football that hits him in the face mask.
Right. Real quick, Andrew. Shouting out Taylor Wine from Nolensville. Heck yeah. It was cool that they showed his dad because Friday is for nights, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid is he was
pretty good.
Fantastic player for us, and boy, he is becoming one hell of a college football player.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Switching gears to Vanderbilt coming up next. A devastating loss to Texas, particularly with how the game started. What does it mean for Vanderbilt and their chances for the college football playoff? We will get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. 94.9 The Fan, your home for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Today, the Commodores take on California at 1:30, pregame starting at 1:15. And Vanderbilt men's basketball taking on Lipscomb tonight at Memorial Gym with a 7 o'clock tip-off and the pregame show starting at 6:30 as well. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Speaking of Vanderbilt, they fall to Texas over the weekend, 34-31, the final. It was a game, Joe, that looked like it was going to get out of hand to start with. Texas just totally dominant for about the first three quarters of the game. They come out, they get a 75-yard touchdown immediately on the first play from scrimmage. Vanderbilt turns the ball over on their first drive. And before you know it, I mean, Texas is up by double digits in the game. Arch Manning's looking good out there, playing good football. Vanderbilt battles back later in the game, ends up cutting it to a three-point game there at the end, but they lose on the road at Texas. They get that second loss, and now you've got Auburn, who just fired their coach, Kentucky, who beat Auburn, and then Tennessee to close out the year here. So what did you make of Vanderbilt's performance at Texas, number one, and number two, what do you make of the situation they're now in with two losses to rebound from it and still make the college football playoff?
Well, it was a bad defensive performance. I mean, right from the first play, and just the tackling on the perimeter for Vanderbilt was really bad. Watching this game, it's like there were a stretch of that game you're like, yeah, so there's a team with four and five stars all over its roster against a team that doesn't have that, and you see a little bit of the difference in Texas. Like, Arch had great numbers. I don't know that Arch – He made a couple downfield. He made a couple throws in the red zone that were good. But, like, most of his throws were, like, screens that turned into – I mean, really, it was quick stuff at yards after catch. I'd love to – I haven't seen the numbers on, like, yards after catch in that game for Texas, but, my gosh, they have to be absurd. And the missed tackles are really bad. It's 24-3. Vanderbilt gets a good drive. And their offense – yeah, you had the turnover early, but their offense was doing fine. It's 24-10. You get the ball coming out in the second half. So, to me, it's like, if they go score a touchdown here, now you make it close. Pavia puts two perfect throws on guys who drop them. Then he gets sacked. So, then it gets out of hand late. He's throwing it all over the yard. Texas has a coverage bust, and it looks a lot better. I still come away with, like, Vanderbilt's offense. I don't feel much different about it. When you get behind in a hole like that on the road, sometimes you know, it's hard. It's just, they can just tee off on you. Their offense is fine. The defense, it was rough. And, you know, a week earlier, their defense really stepped up against Missouri, but they still have some issues and some holes there on defense against good teams. It's crazy when you think about the next two games, Robbie. It's like Kentucky a week earlier gave up 56 to Tennessee on its home field, and then goes to Auburn and gives up three.
Yeah.
Which is, finally gets Hugh Freeze fired. But I think Vanderbilt, I think they should win the next two games. Now, you never know what's going to happen with a football team when their coach gets fired. Yep. Maybe there's some kind of bump for Auburn. But Vanderbilt has a chance here. They have Auburn. They get a week to rest up. They get Kentucky. I think they should win them both. And if they do, they're going to be 9-2, and they're going to be going to Knoxville playing for a playoff spot. And I'll tell you right now, without knowing the state of Tennessee, what their mindset's going to be or whatever at that point, I just don't like Vanderbilt's defense in that matchup at all. It's been a bad matchup for them, and you watch them against Texas, and it's different. But you project ahead to what Tennessee does. Man, I don't like their chances. But, boy, I hope that we as a state get a game with stakes like that. Obviously, yep, we were hoping they were both going to be playing for high stakes, but at this point, Tennessee is playing the spoiler to Vanderbilt.
By the way, I'll see if I can find like the full number for the game, but I am like the Vanderbilt Hustler put this out there. Manning had 200 yards passing in the first half, 185 were yards after the catch.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I mean, seriously, it was just like, and you know, he did fine. He executed fine. I'm not trying to rip Arch. Arch has been ripped enough. I think he's growing.
He's figuring some things out.
Yeah, he looks fine. But, yeah, a lot of it was just like, we don't think these guys can tackle our receivers and running backs, and they couldn't. And that's a very disappointing defensive outcome for Vanderbilt for sure in this game. They gotta go back to the drawing board a little bit.
Oh, and again, like the Auburn game, I'll be honest, has become a little bit more interesting to me now just because, to your point, I have no idea like what's going to – like it's not like they're devoid of talent.
No.
Like, Auburn's got some players. So now that they've fired Freeze, do they get that coaching bump? What does that look like? Like, I think Vanderbilt, I know Kentucky has shown at different times this year that they can play some decent defense. I think that's a game where Vanderbilt's defense should feel pretty good about themselves heading into that game. And I think Vanderbilt score enough on offense where they'll take care of Kentucky. Auburn game's a little bit interesting to me. And then, you know, Tennessee from here, they've got the bye week this week. You've got New Mexico State, and then you got Florida on the road. Well, what happens in that Florida game on the road? You know, regardless of what happens, I know you're going to try to play spoiler against Vanderbilt at the end of the year, but I'm interested to see, like, what sort of approach Tennessee is going to have in that last game, because I'm with you. Like, I think Tennessee's offense could put up a number against Vanderbilt. Thing is, though, I know Tennessee's defense just played a lot better. I think Vanderbilt's offense could put up a number against Tennessee, too. I mean, it'd be a game where both teams get into the high 30s, low 40s.
Yeah. I just think for Tennessee, whatever happens between now and then, I mean, don't they hate Pavia? Aren't they sick of Pavia? Pavia said they're going to run this state. Like, don't they absolutely hate the idea of Vanderbilt getting the playoff while they don't? You would think that stuff like that would motivate on its own.
You would think.
Right? So I just – it's hard for me to buy that on their home field that they're not going to be very motivated to win that game. But I agree that I agree that Vanderbilt's offense certainly could have success against Tennessee's defense. So asking why you're reading the Hustler. That's the student paper at Vanderbilt, which is an interesting choice.
It is.
I assume that the Vanderbilt student paper was named The Hustler before the magazine called The Hustler out. I'm just going to assume that.
By the way.
Maybe even decades before.
That's a massive win for Texas against Vanderbilt to kind of keep themselves alive here. They still have Georgia on the road and A&M to close out the year.
Yeah.
So we'll see on the Texas front.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Texas is another team. We talked about Oklahoma. I mean, what if they split those?
Be 9-3.
They're 9-3.
They could have a shot.
I mean, the thing is, like, go back to the opener. We all think Ohio State's this amazing team. Right? They lost 14-7 on the road at Ohio State. I'm just saying they challenged themselves with that game on top of the ridiculous SEC schedule they have. So, that they would be another one of those possible test case situations. But I mean, there's so much going. Miami completely just.
ACC is getting one team.
Yep,
one team is coming from the ACC.
And we'll see with the Big 12. The big game is BYU Texas Tech this week. They both might get in, but the ACC has been relegated to one big league. Yes.
615-737-1025. Our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad. 1025. The game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Oh, come on down here and work for us. I'll tell you what to do.
Pitch and catch.
I say.
Now what? I say, what's the big idea bashing me on the noggin with a rolling pin?
Oh, hey, D, we're not behind the head football coach down here.
The Cajun kicker?
My God, we'll get you set up with some crawfish etouffee.
You ever had any crawfish etouffee so good your toes curl?
It is time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Another masterful performance from Ian Safar.
You know, I think that I had my little outburst of terrible Cajun accent outbursts.
Well said.
When you were not here, right? I was hoping that you would not have heard this and know that they existed, but I was wrong.
I found them, and Frazier helped me.
Yeah. Thank goodness. I couldn't even say étouffée. Okay.
I say.
All right, so first of all, thanks to Paul Kaharski, who's texting me immediately. Vanderbilt Hustler, 1888. Hustler Magazine, 1974. I said,
have some of that.
I said, you know way too much about this, you weirdo.
Good job, PK.
And also the Columbia Spectator, 1877. Thank you very
much. Good to know.
So there you go. The Vanderbilt Hustler.
Long-standing journalism.
Has full claim to that name. Sorry, Larry Flint. Right, two things I just want to hit real fast, and we can go into whatever you want to talk about.
Okay.
I don't have a really angry rant. I mean, I could rant about YouTube TV and this crap, and I mean, like, if they don't get it figured out this week, like, it's a real problem.
That happened,
man,
during college football, huh? No. YouTube
big issue.
TV, ESPN.
What's that?
No dice this weekend, huh?
Yeah,
no.
Big issue.
No, it's a big problem.
Surprised they didn't get that. Usually they kind of tease it.
I know, and then
figure
it out.
Last second, they figure it out before the games start.
Yep.
Kind of surprising that didn't happen.
Didn't. So ESPN is trying to get people to subscribe to their app, which I'm not doing. And, YouTube TV, This was not supposed to be the ramp, but now I'm going down that road. Well, I have Sunday ticket, and so for people who have that, you're screwed. I mean, you already like paid for it, and so I'm going to switch from YouTube TV probably, even though the quad box, like the four screen thing, is actually really helpful. But you know, at this point I can't, so it's really a problem. But two things I just want to say real fast. One. Happy opening day. College basketball starts today, everybody. Let's get excited.
Thank God.
Big time. Hey, Arizona, Florida tonight is the big one. That's on TNT. So
let me know
that's
how
great. I will. And I can watch it because it's not on ESPN. I mean, that's the thing. The ESPN thing is really going to be a problem as we move into college hoops. And
they'll get it figured out quick.
I hope so. I mean, they better get it figured out this freaking week. And also, I want to give a nod to baseball. We don't talk baseball much on this show unless it's me crying about or screaming about or getting excited about the Detroit Tigers. I mean, you call baseball players soft. So, you know, as an entire group.
Some of them are.
But this World Series was incredible.
Not many other sports where you get hurt playing video games.
This World Series was incredible. Like, one of the greatest World Series of all time. I mean, I think it's right up there with – like, it's probably right up there with anybody remembers 91 Braves Twins. That was also absurd. And Jack Morris going into the, you know, 10th inning game 7. But this was amazing. It really was. And baseball still, for my money, great pitcher, great hitter, postseason, huge moment. I think it's hard for other sports to match that kind of drama. So I know baseball's going through it in a lot of ways, and it's lost some steam with a lot of people, but incredible World Series. And I got to say, you know, congrats, Jimmy White. You know, I really, like, I have no interest in, like, Dodgers fans being any more spoiled than they are.
Yeah.
I will also say, like, the Dodgers are actually a likable team. And, of course, there's Mookie Betts, Nashville's own. Everybody loves Mookie Betts, but they are actually kind of a likable team. As much as they are, like, a Death Star best team money can buy, I kind of like them. Also, Toronto Blue Jays fans, I mean, that's, you know, as a fan, imagine, like, that loss.
That's a tough one.
I mean, that's an all-timer of a loss. So
I'd probably stop allowing Drake to come watch Game 7, in particular, sporting events in the city of Toronto. Doesn't have a good track record.
Yeah.
A lot of Leafs losses that have been sprinkled in there, too.
See,
game 7.
Yeah, well, and also Raptors, I think, right? Although I guess he was there for them for their championship, so he has got going. I don't know how he's done with the Argonauts.
A lot to ask.
I think the Leafs probably are going to do what they do independent of him.
Probably.
Would be my guess. But I like blaming him. I didn't even realize. I didn't see him. They showed
him.
Yeah,
he was there. Yeah. Okay. Right. It was amazing. So the Edmonton Oilers were playing on Saturday night. And I guess, like, they were, you know, playing the game at home, and throughout the game, they just had the Blue Jays game up on the screen. Like, it was just up on the Jumbotron. So there's this play where, like, Edmonton's got the puck behind the net, and nothing's really happening, and the crowd just goes crazy. Like, people are just, oh, yeah! And the announcer's like, oh, the Blue Jays have won the World Series! The Blue Jays have won the World Series! Like, oh, wait a minute, they called him out. No, they didn't. They called him out. So everybody just kind of sits back down, and they interviewed McDavid about it after the game. He's like, yeah, it was really strange. Like, we got the puck in the neutral zone, and people were just breaking out in applause out there.
Actually said they won it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Said that they won it.
Ooh.
And then they, you know, McDavid was talking about sitting on the bench, and he just found himself looking up watching the Jays game. He's like, I'm glad they cut it off in the third period because it was very distracting out there. So, good stuff.
That sounds like the most interesting stuff that's ever come out of Connor McDavid's mouth.
I would agree.
Thank you, baseball.
I would agree.
There you go.
It was a great series. Great series.
No,
you know,
it was.
As somebody who really doesn't have a dog in the fight, I do suffer from Dodgers fatigue.
Yes.
I like some of their individual members of their team collectively. Dodgers fatigue is at a big-time high right now.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. But congrats, Jimmy, and all you Dodgers fans. David in Arkansas says, I've never been so excited for college basketball after the dismal of my two teams I root for. I have more faith in the Hogs basketball team not to disappoint me as much. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Hogs going to be good, man.
Yeah,
still waiting on Cal to
say, when your coach going to call the Hogs?
Still waiting on Cal to call the Hogs. But
I guess I'm going to have to lean into college basketball a little bit more this year based on the other sports that are happening.
I'm telling you, Tennessee, you know, you're gonna miss Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Mashak, but pretty good team Rick Barnes has. He's got a pretty good team. Vanderbilt here. I think Vanderbilt here is an NCAA team. So, you know, Vanderbilt women.
They do play in the NCAA.
Michaela Blakes. I mean, is that, by the way, is that Paris tonight? Jay Kleiman on the call? Paris?
Yeah. 1:15 pregame.
1:15 pregame. They're playing
94-9. Tennessee.
Yeah, Paris, France.
And they're playing Cal, right?
Yep. Crack
Cal, yeah. Michaela Blakes.
Just read it a few minutes ago. I'm glad you were listening to me. Good stuff.
Sorry. I was zoning out, thinking about my rant that wasn't a rant.
615.
My Cajun.
737-1025. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next. Titans fall to 1-8 on the season after the 27-20 loss to the Chargers yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on that, his thoughts on what he's seeing from Cam Ward and more. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.